Hey, folks, thanks for tuning back into the Eye on College Football podcast here on CBSSports.com. I am your host, Chip Patterson, and today we are taking the lead from you all, the listeners. We have picked out a couple questions, and we're going to answer them. And as always, a reminder, if you want to email podcast@CBSinteractive.com, or you can get at us on Twitter, tweeting @IonCFB. You know, just sort of let us know your questions. We will answer them in these new listener mailbags. Joining me to open up this mailbag, Mr. Tom Fornelli. Tom, are you ready to hear what these bright young readers have to say?
I am ready to solve all their problems and answer all their questions, Chip.
We do love getting all kinds of input from you, you know, whether it's love, hate. We always like the feedback. So we will begin with an email from Robert Mitchell. And Robert Mitchell asks, would like to hear a take on the arms race for new stadiums around the country. And he points out as an example, Las Vegas, UNLV, they are calling for a 100-yard video screen in the stadium. Now, Tom, the UNLV stadium plan seems to me like another topic in itself, but I am interested. What are you thinking about the idea that there is an arms race around stadiums, particularly as stadium attendance seems to be going down?
I don't know if I would qualify it as an arms race, to be honest. I mean, I know there's kind of like a bigger scoreboard contest between new stadiums, but I don't see schools so much looking to build giant new stadiums as much as I see, like, you know, what people saying, like Vegas, cities like that, saying what's happened with the Dallas Cowboys Stadium, where they're able to host a whole bunch of different games and events, you know, because it's not just football games. It's UCF or UFC events. It's a whole bunch of different things you can host at these stadiums, which bring in revenue. So I just see Vegas opening the stadium where, yeah, UNLV is going to play its home games there, but it's not really, you know, just for UNLV to have a really cool stadium. It's because they're looking for another sort of revenue to bring into the city. Because this is Las Vegas, and that's what they do. That's why they have these casinos. It's why they're building this stadium. It's just, if you live in Las Vegas and you're going to build a new stadium, considering what you already have on the Strip, you can't just build, you know, a 30,000-seat bowl stadium. It has to be something spectacular that sticks out, or else nobody in the town is going to care. So I don't really think there's an arms race, because I don't think you're going to see schools, like, building giant new stadiums. Yes, they'll be renovating them and adding new scoreboards and new technology as they become available, but you just look at the historic stadiums they played in, they're not going to start tearing those down to build, you know, a futuristic stadium. So Ohio Stadium isn't going anywhere. You know, Bryant Denny's not going anywhere. These stadiums are going to be there forever. It's just they'll make improvements to them. So I don't see an arms race, to be honest.
I'm worried if there's a... We might have already passed this point, but as, you know, a sign of power with the football program is adding seats. You're going to bowl, you know, bowl things in. We're going to add luxury boxes. And as schools are continuing to do this to try and raise money, boost their own sort of prowess, particularly on the recruiting trail, which a lot of people will argue this is for, you know, attendance is going down. And I wonder if there's, 5 years from now, we're gonna see the renovations not adding seats, but subtracting seats to make the fan experience better. Where maybe we're ripping out bleachers and putting in seats, and increasing the technology, like you said. Because I think about Roy Kramer, the former SEC commissioner. He's basically the founder of the BCS for the most part. When he talked to our own Dennis Dodd and said, with the new focus in college football, you know, he fears that we're heading to studio football, where they're making sure that the product on television is more important than the fan experience in person. And the attendance decline has happened in bowl games and regular season games. It's already started everywhere. And I wonder if, while the attendance is going down and our seating capacities are going up, I mean, Duke is about to bowl in their stadium and add like 20,000 new seats. And I feel like that's happening a lot of places. And I wonder if there's almost like a breaking point somewhere as those two lines intersect.
I think you're probably onto something. I think that's definitely going to start happening at some point. But at the same time, that's also why the stadiums keep putting in these giant video boards. Because they know that they have to compete with people watching at home on their high-definition television. So if they want people to start coming to this game, they better give them a giant screen to look at while there. So that way, the stuff they're worried about missing when they're not at home watching on TV, they could see while they're in the stadium.
Right. And like you said, that's also as the NFL continues to start working on improving the stadium experience, the college football will clearly be able to benefit from that and take some notes. We got this next question, Tom, is submitted on Twitter. And Jackson underscore knife, a bearded young man, asks, will Ohio State's terrible schedule keep them from national championship consideration if 13-0? Or will a 25-0 Urban Meyer be enough? Reads to me like a Buckeye fan. What about you?
This is such a typical Ohio State fan question. It's a, we're amazing and we're going to win all our games, but do you think that people will be jealous of us being so much better than they are that we're not winning enough games against enough people and trying to keep us out? It's just so Ohio State putting the cart before the horse, assuming they're going undefeated, Chip, because Urban Meyer went undefeated already, so of course he's going to go undefeated every year because we're Ohio State, go Buckeyes. But I don't understand what he's talking about, the terrible schedule. If Ohio State had been eligible this year, they would have been playing for a national title, correct?
Correct.
What's the main difference from Ohio State's schedule this year is the last year? This year they played a MAC team, a couple Conference USA teams, and Cal. Next year's non-conference schedule is a MAC team, a Mountain West team, Cal again, and an FCS school. That's the only difference. But they're still playing Michigan. They're still playing Penn State. They're still playing Wisconsin. They have to play at Northwestern. If Ohio State goes 12-0, it's going to be playing for a national title game unless there are two undefeated SEC teams, and there can't be two undefeated SEC teams because they'd have to play each other at some point. So, yeah, if Ohio State goes 12-0, they will play for a national championship, and nobody will hold that poor schedule against them, all those poor teams that have to play big, bad, old Ohio State.
Yeah, and I don't understand in the you can look at a schedule, but you don't know who you're going to be playing in that Big Ten championship game either.
No, and also, speaking of putting things before the cart, remember when we looked at Notre Dame's schedule before this season and thought, whoo, man, that is a killer. They're going to go, if they go 6-6, they should be happy. And then look what happened.
Yeah, we sat there before the season, and the conversation was, Notre Dame, a lot of talent, great defense. They're just, the schedule's too hard. There's no way that they're going to be able to survive. And then literally 14 weeks later, the conversation is, Notre Dame, are you kidding me? Their schedule was so easy.
Yeah, and another thing, talking about how easy the schedule was, Mr. Ohio State fan sent in the question. Ohio State struggled at home against UCF. Ohio State struggled at home against Cal. Ohio State struggled at home against UAP. Ohio State struggled at home against Purdue this year. Had to win that game in overtime and come back in the last minute just to get to overtime. Yeah, you went undefeated, but you probably shouldn't be assuming you're going to do it again next year because you barely did it this year.
Yeah, definitely not. Man, Ohio State fans, I hope this leads to more questions from Ohio State fans. I can do this for a long time.
I love Ohio State fans, but to a man and a woman, they're all insane. They're SEC fans in the Big Ten, for essentially. I think that's the best way to describe it, and they could take that as a compliment or insult however they want, but it's just a simple fact. They are SEC fans of the Big Ten. They're insane.
Our next question was submitted via email from John. He does not give a last name, just number one Bearcat fan in the Natty. Good morning.
Woo!
Good morning, Chip. I know you and your panel don't think much at all of the current Big East Football Conference. It's not true. Think about them a lot. But I was wanting...
Chip loved the Big East.
Yeah. I was wanting some thoughts on the future of my Cincinnati Bearcats. Where do you see them heading conference-wise? After all, they've won or shared the Big East title for the last 5 years. And what direction do you guys believe the team will take with new head coach Tommy Tuberville? Thanks, big fan of the show, blah, blah, blah. John, number one Bearcats fan in the Natty. Tom, first, let's start with... Now, I don't know what's going to happen conference-wise, but in general with Tuberville, what was your reaction, or do you have any thoughts on, you know, sort of how the program might move with him sort of making that fast jump from Texas Tech?
You know, what worries me more than anything about Tuberville taking, I mean, they're going to be a good team. He's had good teams where he's been. He had Texas Tech on the right direction this year, taking, you know, building that program up. And he's had success at Auburn. He's had success in other places he's been. It's just exactly that. Tommy Tuberville's been a lot of places. So I know he's at Cincinnati right now, but I'm just not 100% convinced he's still going to be at Cincinnati in 3 years, because if an SEC job comes open and they want to coach with SEC experience and Tommy Tuberville's winning at Cincinnati, which I think he will be because he's in a very weak Big East conference where it really shouldn't be that hard for him to keep having success with this program there, I think somebody's going to look up to Tuberville at Cincinnati and, you know, going to give him a job offer. And is he going to turn it down to stay at Cincinnati? I have my doubts.
Yeah. I think that the move says as much about Tech, as far as Tuberville, the move says as much about Texas Tech and Tuberville's fit there as it does with Cincinnati. Mm-hmm. I think Whit Babcock, the athletic director at Cincinnati, sort of realized that it, with the situation that he had with Butch Jones leaving to take the Tennessee job, he might have known that it was just not working out in Lubbock for Tuberville. He didn't have a great relationship with, you know, whether it's administration, fans. You know, he was quickly able to realize that at that point in the coaching carousel, that was going to be likely the best name that he was going to be able to get, as Cincinnati is still in the Big East. They've reports have come out both locally, you know, they pull out the emails that show Cincinnati, before Louisville got the tap to be asked, invited into the ACC, Cincinnati is sending basically their resumes out to different administrators across the ACC. Cincinnati and Connecticut, you know, according to anybody who tries to, you know, look at the cards, have eyes out the door, you know, anywhere where they can go. I don't know. I think there's too many other pieces that need to fall in line before we could be able to say what Cincinnati's future is. But you're right. With the talent they have there at the school and within the program, and with Tuberville coming in, sure, yeah, it's absolutely possible that they could be competitive for a Big East title in the next couple years, because they've won four out of the last five, at least they've won a share of four of the last five Big East titles. And at how many of those years after Brian Kelly was it a season where in the middle of the year you're like, oh, watch out for that Cincinnati? I mean, it's like they always figure out a way with the right combination of talent and sort of playing their best football in Big East play. They just sort of weasel their way. It seems like they're always backing into these conference titles.
Well, as far as what Cincinnati's future is as a football program is, the answer might just be the future of Cincinnati is the same as its past was. Because if you look at this program, we have technically somewhat of a short-term memory when it comes to Cincinnati football. And the fact is that until Brian Kelly showed up there a few years ago, there really wasn't any Cincinnati football to speak of. It was a program that had spent, you know, had gone back and forth from different quote-unquote mid-major conferences. It started, you know, in the Buckeye Intercollegiate Athletic Association. Then it joined the MAC for a few years, and then it went to the Missouri Valley Conference for a few years, and then it was in the Conference USA for a long time before moving out to the Big East. So it's been a mid-major just about its entire football life. It's just started having success in recent years in a Big East conference that has over time slowly been morphing into another mid-major conference. So I don't know if Cincinnati has, it's a city, yes, but I don't know if as a television market it is really big enough to be a huge draw. Like, the Big 12, if the Big 12 does expand, Cincinnati would be a logical target, as with UConn. But is that enough market, like, for money-wise, to justify the Big 12 adding Cincinnati and having to split that money in another two ways amongst the schools? So I think Cincinnati's best bet might just be staying in the Big East, whether they want to be there or not, because with the new provisions in the playoffs, with, you know, a team out of the group of five, the top qualifying team getting the automatic berth to, you know, one of the major bowl games, Cincinnati staying in the Big East could be in a very good position to be getting that spot every year and still staying nationally relevant. Whereas if it joined the Big 12 or if it joined the ACC or even the Big 10, if that somehow managed to manifest, it might just go back to being an also-ran. Yes, it would be in a big conference, but it wouldn't be anything anybody thought of very often.
That's a good point. They could own the competition for that spot where you're just going in to every single season thinking, you know, Cincinnati is going to be a team, the team to beat among the group of five, because they'll have, you know, in the eyes of many, the inside track towards that spot.
Yeah, but of course, they'll still have to compete against Boise State and so on. But still, I think you might have a better chance competing just against Boise State, a couple other Mountain West schools, and maybe a couple other Big East schools than they would inside the Big 12 or inside the ACC or Big 10 or wherever the hell they end up.
Man, and looking at the Big East right now, they might have a better chance in the Big East than Boise State does in the Mountain West.
Yeah, because the Mountain West is it's
pretty
coming
good.
Up as a conference.
Yeah. Things are going pretty well for the Mountain West. Not only do they get San Diego State and Boise State back, they pick up some of the whack in there. It's going to be a 2013. Very much looking forward to the Mountain West. Should be a fun.
And plus, as they're adding a conference championship game, it's going to be a lot tougher for the Mountain West to sneak into the top 15 too, because that's just another chance for them to lose and fall out.
That is right. All right, our next question comes from on Twitter. At Gordeh, Gordhh. Don't know what that stands for. But they ask, thoughts on Cliff Kingsbury's new staff, particularly the offensive line and defensive coordinator positions. Cliff Kingsbury obviously gets the tap, 32 years old, right?
Yeah, he's a kid. He's basically my age.
32 years old, and he is the head coach at Texas Tech. Fans love it. Clearly, he was able to prove what many people believed that he was capable of as a coach as he was under Sumlin at Texas A&M. He helped coach Johnny Manziel in that incredible Heisman Trophy run. Now he's at Texas Tech. Now he's assembling his own staff. He reaches to Houston. He reaches to Texas A&M. He's sort of, you know, piecing it all together. My thoughts initially on Kingsbury's new staff is a quiet confidence. I'm not going to come out and boast and say, oh, they're going to be ready to take the Big 12 by storm. But I look at the general coaching tree, whether, you know, you go back to your Holgorsen, your Sumlin, you've got, you know, your Leach, and you look at all the different branches of these coaches that have worked together and collaborated. And when I see him reaching out to other coaches that have similar backgrounds, I am confident, but I cannot say personally that I know enough to be completely optimistic.
Yeah, I mean, if you look at this staff on the whole, it's the good news is, I mean, I can't sit and predict how great of a coaching staff it's going to be, but it's coaches that he's familiar with, and it's coaches that he's worked with in his short time as a coach, you know, on the sidelines. So there's familiarity on the coaching staff, and they know what to expect and what, you know, Kingsbury wants from them. So I think when you look at it from that perspective, I think it's a good staff. They know what they want to do, and everybody generally has the same kind of approach to things.
Yeah. And we'll wrap it up with this one, a little NFL draft question. And please, listeners, I eat up the process between the end of college football and the NFL draft. I don't know why. I dig it. So I would love to get more of these questions. But it's interesting. It's from at NCSU alum and is asking about North Carolina running back Gio Bernard. He writes, curious about Gio in the NFL. What system would fit him best? Asks Saints at Kedera or Jets at Kedera. Full-time back? Asking if Bernard could be a full-time back in the NFL. Interesting coming from NCSU alum. Gio Bernard beat NC State after the Heels had lost a lot to their in-state rivals on a punt return in the fourth quarter this past year. Bernard, 1,000-yard rusher this year, was the leading rusher in the ACC, had a great season last year as well. I think that lingering injury issues certainly were one of the reasons he went pro, but they will also be some of the reasons that NFL teams might want to keep some distance from him. Tom, I don't know. What's do you have any particular read on Bernard's pro prospects?
I mean, I think he's good. He's definitely going to get a shot. He's going to get drafted. I don't know how good, but like you said, I don't know how great he's going to be in the pros. I mean, I like his size. He's only 5'10", but he's over 200 pounds, which is good. You know, he could take the physical punishment that a running back has to be. And like you said, It's one of the reasons he's leaving now is because he's getting a lot of carries at North Carolina these last 2 years, and he's been banged up. So running backs only have so many miles in those legs. But just looking at Bernard from a talent standpoint, yeah, I think he could be somebody who, you know, definitely contributes and has a good pro career. He's very, very skilled. And what impressed me more about him this year than anything was he had less carries, but he only finished with like 30 less yards on the season than from what he did in 2011. And that's because he improved his average rush, you know, per rush from 5.2 to 6.7 yards. And he's also proven that he's, you know, he can catch the ball out of the backfield. These are things that NFL teams see. They see the speed. They see the good size. They see the good hands. And these are things that they're going to want. Now, whether he could be an every down back, I don't know. I'm not really all that up to date on whether he's much of a pass blocker, but he would have to learn how to be if he's not, if he wanted to be an every down back in the NFL. But, no, I think he's going to get drafted, and I think he's going to have at least a good shot to be a backup his rookie year, if not more, depending on where he goes.
Yeah, I'm going to – my final judgment on Bernard is he might be a full-time back. My read on him is that he might actually be better not as a full-time back, but he could have a longer career because of it, because he can be a specialized back, a third down back, and at North Carolina he contributed as a punt returner. So if he can come in and he can, you know, play a little bit on special teams, if he can stay healthy, you know, he had ACL surgery. That's why he redshirted his freshman year. He tweaked his knee, had a couple other issues along the way. If he can stay healthy, you know, he can be used in the way, and this is, you know, we're recording this, you know, this week after watching the AFC Championship game, the same way that, you know, a Shane Vereen or Danny Woodhead is used in the Patriots offense, where you're going to be, you know, swinging out a lot and given the ball in open space with the expectation that you're going to be able to make a couple moves and get 5 yards. And I could see him being able to do that.
He could be, I don't know, I want to say he's going to be, but he could be very much like a Darren Sproles type of guy.
Yes, and I think that's probably why the question was posed with Saints at Ketterer. And I think that even beyond Saints or Jets, I think that you just see in the NFL, I mean, a lot of teams are going to have a use for a player with that kind of skill. So certainly I do think Gio Bernard will have all the opportunities to succeed in the NFL.
Agree.
Well, that about wraps up this listener mailbag. Folks, please do keep them coming. We enjoy getting all your feedback, and we will enjoy tackling some of these questions as we proceed in the offseason. Feel free to ask us questions not about football. Tom and I will answer them. We're not afraid. And be sure to, you know, let's keep it rolling. Let's see. I'd like to see what our listeners can provide as far as some insightful conversation. I thought pretty good first crop of questions, don't you think?
I'd like to delve deeper into the psyches of our listeners and find out how crazy they really are.
Show us your inner insanity.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And Ohio State, please continue to ask us questions about how great you're going to be.
Yes, please. I'd love to talk about that. Well, my thanks once again to Tom Fornelli. Be sure you can follow him on Twitter at Tom Fornelli. Follow the Eye on College Football blog at IonCFB. And you can get all of the Eye on College Football podcasts at iTunes or find them featured on CBSSports.com embedded into the blog. For Tom Fornelli, I'm Chip Patterson. Thanks so much for listening.